Today on Maine Calling, some hope for first-time homebuyers. The confluence of high home prices and interest rates and record high demand has conspired against many would-be homebuyers in Maine. But all is not lost. I'm Keith Shortall, and today we'll learn about programs being offered by the state and by some employers that are designed to open the door to home ownership. The opportunities are more prevalent in some areas of the state, less so in others, but those who qualify can get grants to cover down payments and closing costs, and loans at below market rates. We'll learn more about how buyers with lean resources are landing properties, even in market conditions that make home ownership seem well out of reach. Maine Calling is coming right up.
Maine Calling on Demand is made possible by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to island and coastal Downeys communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. Ask anyone of moderate means who's trying to buy a home in Maine. It's very hard, if not seemingly impossible in some parts of the state, to find a home that you can actually buy, much less afford. But there is help out there, and we'll explore those options today. This show is part of our series, The Cost of Living, Maine's Housing Shortage. Joining me are Jessica Gurney, Consumer Education and Outreach Coordinator for Maine Housing, Amy Smith, President of Healthy Homeworks, and Becky Wilson, Real Estate Agent with the Masiello Group. We invite you to join the conversation. Have you been hoping to buy a home, or are you involved in efforts to help others? Email talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call. The number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Jessica, I'll start with you. Let's describe the landscape as of this moment, and maybe look back a few years at how we got here. It's a seller's market, I guess we would say, and has it been so since the pandemic in-migration began here now, what, almost 4 years ago?
Yeah, so in my role, as far as educating first-time homebuyers, we see the need for first-time homebuyers to become informed buyers. And so we believe that knowledge is power. And so we want the first-time homebuyers to go through the process feeling confident. We know about the lack of inventory on the market. So we're taking the approach to educate these first-time homebuyers. And we do that through a different series of programs that we offer.
So we'll talk about those.
But
you would acknowledge that it's been really difficult for buyers, right? We have options we're going to discuss today, but I think it's important to sort of describe the environment that we're in. And you would say it's sort of different than it's been in a very long time.
Absolutely. But what I will say to that is that we still have first-time homebuyers that are finding homes. In fact, this year we've already purchased 432 loans from first-time homebuyers. So they are finding the inventory out there. It definitely is a struggle. And we have many first-time homebuyers that are ready and looking. And so it definitely is a concern with the inventory on the market.
Yeah. Let's go to the realtor here on the panel. Becky Wilson, you're on the front lines of this every day. Talk a little bit about what we've seen in the last 4 years. Like, how did we get here? Did this all sort of begin with this influx of folks from out of state who were either fleeing the pandemic or retiring early or any and all of that?
Yes, I definitely think we saw an increase of people moving to Maine, which didn't really help the supply versus demand that was already an issue. We have actually been very low in supply for a very long time. And so the increase of people moving here definitely made the market a little more challenging.
I was going to say, you were going to say their supply was low before. Some people may not realize that. So yeah, go ahead. More on that.
Yes, most definitely it was. I actually was just learned some statistics recently from 1978 to now in 2024 that the existing home sales in 1978 were just 4.09 million sales in 1978 to now where it's 4.14 million existing home sales. And our population back in 1978 was 224 million U.S. citizens to now 341 million. So when you look at that data, it really puts the shortage in perspective.
And so add to the shortage there, or actually add to the influx in the demand, is now this what emerged post-pandemic was this ability to work remotely. So you have workers from all over the United States, maybe from urban areas who are getting high salaries in their jobs, but can then move to, you know, say Portland and work from their apartment. So they have the cash to buy houses, and they can also afford with their earnings from that remote work. So has that been a factor?
Most definitely, yes. And it also is a factor in where people, you know, it's where they can live. So they will look at a different demographic and they will move to where, you know, as long as they can get good Wi-Fi and able to work from home, they have the ability to, you know, move in different areas. And so, you know, some small towns are definitely in Maine are desirable, you know, in privacy as well. So as long as you have a little perseverance, you can definitely find a home.
Amy, I want to ask the same question of you in terms of the landscape, I guess, we're seeing here. Is the way that we've described this in terms of supply and demand and the factors that are influencing the demand side and the supply side, which is also inflation, which is affecting building material prices, is this sort of a perfect storm of difficulty for buyers in the mid to lower price ranges?
Yeah, thanks for that, Keith. So yes, I would say it's a perfect storm, but also when we talk about inventory, our work is focused squarely on 12 blocks in downtown Lewiston, where the rate of home ownership is only 4%. And a lot of the buildings are multifamilies with a lot of, the nice word is deferred maintenance. And so when you have that low rate of home ownership, you have to wonder why. And one big piece of it is that the condition of the homes, the idea of buying one and fixing it up is just overwhelming, both financially and from an expertise perspective. So we started working on this before the big in-migration due to COVID, once we learned about the 4% home ownership rate. So it's a perfect storm. I think, you know, the biggest point for us and the reason we're so focused on it is we feel like people who earn between $50,000 and $80,000 workforce, our essential workers, should be able to get a foot in the door on home ownership. And so that's the demographic that we're targeting, and happy to go into that in more detail, yeah. But a lot at play.
Sure. So, and there's been a lot of talk about, you know, transforming the existing housing stock into affordable first-time homes. But as you point out, there's a lot of renovation that has to happen, not just to make them pretty, but to make them livable and safe and insurable and mortgageable. And so let's talk about why you've targeted Lewiston and see if and talk about whether this is a movable idea. These are multifamily homes. Some have referred to them as tenements. I don't know if that's not a good phrase to use anymore. But it was housing built for mill workers, right? At the time when Lewiston was fully functioning mill town?
Yeah, that's correct. We like to call them triple deckers, which is just one type, which is three stacked units. And that's really the focus of our modeling. But it's also a great housing stock. It, as long as the bones are still good, it creates three separate apartments that have always been separate, with basically one family per level. And the way, and Munjoy Hill is loaded with these, right? So to me, Lewiston is Munjoy Hill 20 years ago, where they were all multifamilies and now they're all condominiums. And so the what we have learned in trying to create attainable starter homes is that we can acquire and retrofit one unit of a triple decker for $200,000, but then its market value as a condominium is only $150,000. So, you know, developers on the open market aren't going to bother with that, because who wants to lose 50 grand a unit, right? But as a nonprofit, we've put together a model that includes philanthropy and impact investing and CDFIs to fund this. And we do feel like it is a movable, sustainable model, because we're also working at the policy level to with Maine Housing and others to close that $50,000 gap per unit with programming, with grants and forgivable loans. That up at this moment, there's tons of that stuff out there for rental units, but almost nothing for homeownership units.
And what causes that gap? Is it has it always been there, or is it inflation and the effects on the cost of labor more recently and supplies?
So a lot of this housing stock was built between 1900 and 1930. Building codes have changed, heating systems, you know, requirements from the city, safety requirements. The $50,000 gap per unit is really, it falls into two buckets: life safety and energy efficiency. And so it's very easy to band-aid these buildings together, which happens all across the country in many kinds of housing stock, to make them okay rentals. But if you want to turn them into quality, and again, not, you know, super shishy granite and stainless, but just durable quality starter homes that a bank will finance, an insurance company will insure, you have to spend more than in Lewiston than they are worth in the Lewiston market. If this same building were located somewhere else where housing prices are higher, like Munjoy Hill, then it does make financial sense to do that level of upgrade, because you'll get it back.
And so in addition to providing this gap in the funding to make these $150,000 spaces available, are there policy issues that you work on too, in terms of, I don't know, are there zoning issues? Are there other, you know, policy issues that you think could be change to clear the way to make this an easier process?
Absolutely. And all the policy is around the programs with funding from city, state, and federal government to close the gap. So I could go into a lot of detail on that, but the answer is to change the rules around what kinds of housing can get assistance to be created.
Sure. Jessica, Maine Housing is also offering help, as you mentioned, you know, through what's called the First Generation Program. And I want to kind of talk about, to clarify, who qualifies for that. And I had read that it's available only to buyers who did not grow up in a home owned by their parents or guardians. Just talk about that, that bar that's created there. It's obviously meant to target first time buyers, but why that, is that the correct screen for you, and why is it set that way?
All right. So we launched our First Generation Program back in April of 2023, and we wanted to sort of help bridge the gap for families that were able to build wealth through homeownership and for those families that had not. So we offer another program at Maine Housing called First Home Loan, and I can go into that a little bit later on. But with our first generation program, we're looking at a $10,000 grant to help with down payment and closing cost in a reduced interest rate. So our daily rate today on our first home loan program is 5.95. So our first generation rate is 4.95. So with a 4.95 interest rate, which is pretty great, and $10,000 to help with your closing cost and down payment, we wanted more people to be able to obtain home ownership. And something some families are able to give a gift of equity, you know, when purchasing a home. And for people that are first generation buyers, we wanted them to be able to have the experience of home ownership and build wealth, generational wealth through that. And so with that program, we realized that the journey to home ownership looks different to everyone. And so we put some different supports in place to help those buyers become successful homeowners.
So how do you, I'm just curious if you were screening for people, if I came to you and said, hi, I'd like this first time, first generation program, and I didn't grow up in a house that was owned by my parents. Do I have to prove that? Or how do you get there to prove qualification?
Great question. So there are two different ways that people can qualify for this program. So the first one is if they did not live in a home that was owned by their biological parents or legal guardians. So if growing up as a child, their parents or their legal guardians rented a home. The other way that they can qualify is if they've been in foster care at any point in time. And so on the loan application, they would have to attest and sign which way they qualify for this program.
Okay. And they can get, as you mentioned, a grant. So just an outright gift of money to go toward closing costs or the down payment.
Yes, that is correct. Yep.
And so you found like that's just the difference between people being able to buy a home and not being able to buy a home. Like, you know, as much as just, you know, $8,000 and a lower interest rate.
That is correct. Yes. And last year we started the program in April. So from April to December, we had 73 first generation home buyers. And this year, just from January until as of June, we have already had 74. And my favorite part of my job is I get to connect with these first generation home buyers and hear their stories. And for so many people, to get into an apartment, depending on what part of the state you're in, you could be looking at, you know, $3,000 for first month's rent, $3,000 for their last month's rent, $3,000 for security deposit. And they were able to get into our first generation program versus having to come up with all of those funds to get into an apartment.
And so, were those 74 sort of dispersed around the state or in maybe cooler real estate markets?
Yeah, no, they were dispersed around the state. Last year, the average purchase price for a first generation home buyer was $220,166. And so far this year, our average purchase price is $264,992. Part of what we saw, though, was that we have to always keep in mind that some of our future first-time home buyers bring to the table prior background knowledge about what it means to be a homeowner, and some people do not. And so we really looked at how do we create this program honoring all journeys towards home ownership and recognizing that everyone's journey is going to take a different time period. We have some people that were ready to become buyers, and we have some people that are sort of just mapping out their journey. So through that process, we identified that we needed to create that solid foundation of understanding what it means to be a homeowner. And so we put a new program in place. So for our first generation program, we require the client take a financial literacy class. So we've partnered with agencies across the state, such as Prosperity Maine. We work with Amy Smith Healthy Homeworks. And we also work with PenQuest, and we offer a variety of financial literacy classes. And the important thing to keep in mind is that the financial literacy classes never expire and they are free. So anybody who's interested in this journey to homeownership can start with a financial literacy class. We also have homebuyer education classes that are taught through a nonprofit called Homeworks, and they're offered across the state. And something that we found with that, as after COVID, is that we want to make our classes flexible and accessible to everyone. So I guess one shining thing that came out of COVID was virtual classes. And so we've seen an increase in the amount of classes that we offer virtually and in person, and the amount of first generation and also just first time home buyers that are interested in taking our classes. So by a combination of dropping the rate and also with the 10,000 and also offering this great education program so that they can be an informed buyer, I think that's really a positive thing that we're doing.
Yeah, and I think home ownership, I've discovered, is a mandatory ongoing education, lifelong education course each day. We're going to take a quick break. We'll talk much more about this. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we're learning about efforts to help overcome the challenges of buying and affording a home in Maine. With me are Amy Smith, president of Healthy Homeworks, Becky Wilson, a real estate agent with the Masiello Group, and Jessica Gurney, consumer educator and outreach coordinator for Maine Housing. Share your comments and questions. What are your concerns about home buying in Maine in the current climate? Email talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call. The number 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now on the line is Liam Hunter. He's a first-generation home buyer. Liam, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
So tell us your story. You were looking around in southern Maine, as I understand it, having a difficult time, not surprisingly, finding a way to rent, I guess, even so much as own a place. But tell us that story.
Yes, I was living down in Biddeford for the past 10 and a half, 11 years. And rent just became so astronomical that I had to get a second job in order to attempt to afford it. So then I decided to try to see what the home buying process would look like and whether or not it was feasible for me.
Yeah, and what? So obviously you thought it was possible, but what was your sense about how difficult it would be when you set out to do it?
So I knew that I was going to have some challenges with financial, given that I'm a single person trying to afford everything solo. And so my what I qualified for a loan was low in terms of home buying, and there were no chance of finding a price within that range in the southern Maine area. So I had to broaden my search into other parts of the state in order to try to make that happen.
Yeah, and so where did you land?
I landed in Mexico.
Okay, and so tell us about the property.
So it's just a small 864 square foot little bungalow home. Doesn't have a ton of land, but it has enough. Nice fenced-in backyard, driveway with a garage. It's a really cute property.
And so living in Mexico is fine with you. You, in other words, the location. How did you weigh the location versus just really wanting to be in a home that you owned?
So I had preferred other locations. Actually, Mexico wasn't my top pick of places to reside, but it was where I found a home that really worked with what I needed. And so that was at the foremost of importance, was finding something that was affordable and met all of my specifications.
Yeah, and so you're happy with how this has worked out?
Yes, I am. I'm starting to get to know the area, and it's a huge change from, you know, living by the ocean my entire life to now living in the mountains, but I'm getting there.
Yeah, right. Well, Liam, congratulations, and thank you so much for sharing your story. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me.
Liam Hunter, a first-generation home buyer. Becky, as a real estate agent, I'm sure you work with people like Liam all the time who This is more than just a business transaction for them. It's sort of a something that's important to them on many levels and for personal reasons.
Yes, buying a home is one of the biggest purchases you'll ever make in your life, until maybe you do it again. First-time home buyers, you really need our guidance and support and help them with our tools as far as, you know, making sure they work with a local lender, making sure that they might qualify for some of these awesome programs that Maine has to offer. So that's all part of guiding them home, is guiding them in the right direction and knowing that, maybe we look in different areas.
Right. I was going to say, do you have that conversation with buyers saying, hey, look, based upon what you bring to the table here and your means, we're probably not going to be able to find a property where you want to find it, but consider X. Is that a conversation you have a lot?
Most definitely. As long as they're willing and able to move in a different direction, if their work could transfer in that area, or if they have the ability to work from home, maybe that is an option that they hadn't really thought about, moving into a different area. So that is definitely a conversation I have with them. The importance of, maybe they need to up their budget and ways of doing that. They speak with their lender on what their options are.
Right. I want to bring in Tama Spurry, Vice President of Human Resources for Bowdoin College. Tama, welcome.
Hi, Keith. Thank you.
And so we're bringing you in here to talk about how employers in Maine, in this case Bowdoin College, have come up with ways to help employees purchase homes. First of all, talk about why. Is this about finding candidates for jobs that are moving here, but are expressing frustration with not being able to find a place to live?
It's a combination of that, as well as even our employees. So we bring in new faculty members, and they go through a process to get tenure, and they might be here 3 or 4 years, and they've been looking for places, and they're finding that they're not affordable, or that they get outbid. So we were, really trying to address, kind of high mortgage rates, limited availability of affordable homes, and giving them a tool that could help them, be a first-time home buyer.
Yeah, so how does it work?
So what we're doing is working with actually Kennebunk Savings and Bath Savings Institute, and what we do is provide a first-time home buyer assistance. In essence, it's a 10-year forgivable loan, and what we do is we'll forgive 10% of it every year for 10 years. It's a maximum of $50,000, so for a 10% of the home price up to $50,000. So far we've had 11 employees participate, 6 who've actually closed on houses. So it's been a great program for us and for our employees.
So it's helped. We all know about the reason of retaining employees. Is this also aimed at that? Because there seems to be an incentive to stay with the house and assume with the job as well. Yeah.
Yes, so there is a bit of that retention because again the loan is forgiven over 10 years as long as they remain employed with us. So there is a piece of that retention tied to it, but also we've had a new faculty member who's joining us who happened to just find a house quickly, and it's helped her transition to Maine be incredibly smooth. So it's kind of for both the new hire as well as the existing employee.
Yeah, is this something that you're finding? Do you know of colleges and other locations doing this, or other employers doing the same sort of thing? Have you invented the wheel here, or are you borrowing from what others are doing?
We're somewhat borrowing what some others have done in our higher ed space. In other areas of the country, they have had similar type of programs. So we kind of took from a number of our peers and colleagues in the higher ed space to come up with this program. Our program is only going to be, right now, we started it in March of this year, and it has a two-year window, so it'll end on February 28th of 2026. And then we'll review and see if we want to continue it after that time. So we're kind of piloting it for 2 years to see how it goes.
All right. Well, we'll check in, no doubt, later to see how that's going. Tama Spurry, Bowdoin College's VP of Human Resources, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Keith.
Let's take a phone call. We'll go to Maura, who is calling from Falmouth. Hi, Maura. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to mention that my parents, when I was building my house, my parents said, put in an in-law apartment, put in an in-law apartment. This was before this was popular. So I did. I upgraded my septic for a four-bedroom house, and I did, and that worked out fine. And now we have a lot of teachers with me, young teachers, who can't afford to buy a house. So I'm wondering, what if they bought, two parties bought a house lot together, and one put a primary house and one put an accessory dwelling unit, which according to the Maine laws, I think they took place July 1st, 2023, any house can add an accessory dwelling unit up to 850 square feet. If you're clever, you can get a lot of house into that 850 square feet. So I just want to throw that out there as one thing as to make housing more affordable. And also mention, I saw this program, teachernextdoor.us, Maine Housing Grants, up to $10,000 down payment assistance and forgivable grants. Grants from $1,000 to $8,000, down payment assistance up to $10,681 through Maine Housing. So that might be something available for people too.
Yeah, I thank you, Maura, for your question and notes. Who wants to? I'll throw it open to the panel here. Just jump in.
Well, I will. This is Becky. I will say I do feel that families are starting to live a little bit more together. If they're doing a second dwelling or if they're building an in-law apartment, we do see that trend happening. As far as that grant goes that you were just speaking of, I'm not quite aware of that one.
Yeah, Jessica, do you know what she's referring to, the teacher grant?
It's Jessica here. What I can say is it's not something that's offered through Maine Housing, although we do offer. So we have our first home loan, which offers $5,000 to a first-time home buyer. But there's also a misconception around what is a first-time home buyer. So we consider a first-time home buyer to be anyone that in the last 3 years has not had interest in a principal residence. So what does that mean? That means you might have owned a home and the last 3 years you've been renting. So we would consider you a first-time home buyer again.
Wow.
So
okay. That's a big qualification there. And I think it's important because the clock resets, in other words, if you're not constantly in ownership.
Correct. And the other way that you can also qualify as a first-time home buyer is if you own a property, but in the last 3 years you did not live in it, and that would be proved through your tax returns, we would consider you a first-time home buyer again. And so the way that our first home loan works is we offer a $5,000 grant to help with down payment and closing cost. And our rate today on that is 5.95, and our first generation rate is 4.95. But I also wanted to mention that we have a multi-unit advantage program. So we offer $5,000 for the single family home, but if somebody were to purchase a duplex, we offer $8,000. So we give an additional $3,000 per unit up to a four unit, which we would allow a $14,000 grant.
Yeah, so there are a lot of options here, and it probably behooves would-be buyers to have a conversation with someone at Maine Housing or other programs. But let's take another call. We'll go to Michael in Ellsworth. Hi, Michael. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for the call. Yeah, so I was on air with you, I guess, about 4 years ago, 2020, maybe early 2021. And I was, at the time, squatting in a warehouse, and we were talking about potentially zoning issues and maybe reimagining the way that we zone some industrial and commercial spaces that are sitting empty. And that conversation was in terms of rental I'm just curious on a policy level if that's something that we could still be looking at in terms of ownership as condos and such. Mm-hmm. That's one point. Another point is actually earlier this morning, I got word that an offer on my first house was accepted. So there is room for that.
Congratulations.
It is possible.
So tell us about what was that experience like? Was it extremely difficult, or how would you describe it? And for others who are listening who might be intimidated.
About the purchasing price? Well, I did take advantage of some of the programs that you guys have been discussing today. What made it possible in the end for me, and also somewhat more complicated, was partnering up. I now am in a two-income household instead of a single-income household. The issue with that is my wonderful girlfriend has previously owned a condo out of state, so we now neither of us qualify for any first-time homebuyer programs, even if I've never owned one. So that is something to consider for people, that if one person in a partnership has owned previously, then nobody's eligible for these programs, which is unfortunate. But the process is daunting up in the NDI area, especially. And I'm a builder, right? I build houses, and it just at times did seem impossible to find financing for anything that was within our price range.
Yeah, Michael, it's a little loud and you're hard to hear there, but I got your points. And thank you for checking back here after a few years, and congratulations on your home. We're going to take another quick break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. What does it take to buy a home in Maine? Some help, in some cases. We're learning about creative solutions to the state's housing crisis. My guests are Becky Wilson, the Masiello Realty Group, Jessica Gurney with Maine Housing, and Amy Smith with Healthy Homeworks. Join the conversation, the number 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. Amy, I want to go to you. The caller just prior to the break here was talking about retrofitting industrial spaces. And I wonder if you could talk about that from the perspective of what you've been doing in Lewiston.
Sure. So there is a lot of retrofitting going on, especially right in Lewiston and some of the mill areas, but it's all rental housing. And the reason is, as I said earlier, it's because it's so expensive to do an up-to-code energy efficient retrofit. And the only well-understood programs for doing that are for creating rental units, it really comes down to money. When you're trying to create inventory out of existing buildings, you really need assistance, because the assistance that's out there obviously acknowledges this gap, right, between what it costs to buy a building and retrofit it for quality inhabitation. And so pushing the needle on that is a really big deal, to work with the programs to get more money to create rental housing. And it's worst of all with condominiums, because they have to be done perfectly in order to qualify for insurance and finance. So kudos to people who are doing this. I mean, Picker House Loft, there's a lot of stuff going on in Lewiston and Brunswick with those kinds of retrofits. They make beautiful homes. It's just tipping that in a way that can make it attainable for home ownership is just, it's really tricky math.
So maybe it was like more than 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I bought an old house, which I have still, and it needed a lot of work to be insurable and to be so I could get a mortgage. So I simply took out a reno loan on top of the mortgage and did all the work, and paid that all together. Does that not exist anymore? Someone told me once, oh no, they don't do that anymore. Is it possible to get money on top of a purchase to fix your house?
Jessica here. I'd like to speak to that. So at Maine Housing, we have a program in addition to our first home loan. We have what's called Purchase Plus Improvement. And that program allows the borrower to borrow up to an additional $35,000 to make the home more accessible. So things that are included in that are Energy Star appliances, a new furnace, windows, roofing, insulation. It also includes building a garage. So that is done through the lender. So we work with 40 lenders across the state that offer our products and programs. So if someone's interested in that, that's how they would go through that.
So what is Maine Housing's role when you say we work through that? In other words, the lender won't do that on their own. What role do you play in facilitating that extra credit?
Okay, so Maine Housing works as an investor. So the loan is actually closed through the 40 lenders that we work with, and then Maine Housing purchases the loan after. So the actual lender will be in charge of that money that's set aside, and those repairs have to be done within 6 months.
Okay. So, sorry if I didn't understand, but are you assuming some of the risk? Or no?
The lender is in charge of that.
Okay.
So some lenders offer this program and some do not.
Okay, interesting. I don't know if any of you saw it. There was an article in today's Portland Press Herald about a project that includes affordable units. It appears to be like a certain number, 30% are carved out for a certain income levels. But it seems like on the surface anyway, a very intentional effort to provide affordable housing. And I know this could be a whole other topic, but. And I'll throw this out to the panel. Is it inevitable that affordable housing efforts will in some way either have to be subsidized or a philanthropic exercise? Or are there ways to engineer it so that developers and builders can make a profit?
So I'd like to jump in on that. So
okay.
From a vocabulary standpoint, there are a lot of words that mean rental housing that people might not know. So affordable, market rate, workforce, subsidized housing literally all means rental units, just to make that clear when people are reading articles in the paper and whatnot, versus attainable homeownership units. And so it's just important to understand that there's a big difference there in the programming. So I do think that you absolutely need some kind of subsidy to bring back old buildings, for sure, but that the government has been doing that for decades for rental units. So not to sound like a broken record, but the key to making this actually happen in a sustainable way is at the policy level to influence the program design. And the really big difference here is, like, when you bought your house and you fixed it up, I'm assuming it was a single family, and you know, you can only get into so much trouble with a sort of a small single family. You can get in a lot of trouble with a 3 or 6 unit multifamily, thinking it's going to cost X and then it's going to cost Y instead. And so one of the approaches that we're taking as a nonprofit is we purchase the building in whatever state it's in. We assume all the risk. We get all the lenders, and our lenders are awesome, awesome lenders. In the Sewell Foundation is participating, Genesis Fund, you know, CEI. We've got a great lineup of people who are helping us in addition to the philanthropy. But the key is we take on all the risk. And then the first time home buyers are buying quality housing that they did not have to figure out how to renovate, guess at what that's going to cost, take out loans, turn upside down financially because it turned out to be a bigger deal than they thought it was.
But you think it'll have to be incentive driven or through the good deeds of organizations like yours?
I don't. I think right now, to prove the model and to start creating inventory that, you know, for $150,000, you can get a 1,250 square foot, 2-bedroom, 1-bath. Like, that's awesome, right? So I think that first people need to understand that that's possible. And then philanthropy is just for the first, you know, 20 units. Because that's not sustainable. The sustainable thing is programmatic redesign. They've done it for rental units for decades. So yeah. Time to take on home ownership.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to Grayson in Portland. Hi, Grayson. Welcome.
Hey, Keith. Thanks for having me on the call. So I just wanted to, I know there was a show about cooperatives recently, and when talking about rentals versus ownership and, you know, hopefully people having equity and stability in their homes, like it seems to be a happy medium, and how some places around the world have actually built it through the public sector homes for ownership or cooperative ownership, and why, you know, isn't why can't we pursue that same strategy either through at the municipal or the state level? So that was my question. Yeah. Putting that out there.
Yeah, Grayson, thank you. And a similar question comes from Robert, who writes, "I'm getting we're planning my fiancée and I are planning to begin our house search shortly after we get married next year, and it seems like Maine's first-time home buyer program offers less funding for buyers than some of our neighboring states, especially Vermont and Massachusetts. So it's two different questions, but in the same theme is, could we do more? And Jessica, I'll go with you first to the second question about how does Maine compare, I guess, to our New England neighbors in terms of the generosity of its assistance?
So I'm not an expert on the other states, but what I can tell you is that our grant used to be $3,500, and so we did change the amount to $5,000 to help our first-time home buyers have more to put as, you know, the down payment towards closing costs. So we have increased the amount, and we do try to make sure that our rates are at least 1 point below market rate. So those are the things that we're doing here in Maine.
Yeah. The second part of Grayson's question is about why can't governments do more to build housing for cooperative. I'm not sure if anybody, does anybody on the panel have anything, have any thoughts about that? And that's fine if you don't, but if you do, now is the time. Okay, well, Grayson, go ahead, Amy.
I just say the Cooperative Development Institution of New England is a great resource for that, and this is their mission, right? Is to figure out how to do it at the co-op level.
Yeah. So let me ask this: we're talking about solutions right now. I wonder if any of you could like look into your crystal ball and see into the future for us toward a time maybe when, do you anticipate that interest rates will, as they always do, sort of ease a bit, that inflation will ease a bit, that the housing supply may be driven by building efforts and by innovations that are being done in Lewiston. Will the marketplace, Amy, I'll go to you first. Do you think the marketplace over time will even all this stuff out? Or have we reached a point where it's just never going to be the same as it was?
Wow, if I had the answer to that.
And it's good because you only have 2 minutes left or a minute left. So.
Yeah. No, I have no idea. I just know that there needs to be some, if we as a society value homeownership and think that giving people access to long-term financial stability is important, we will change the way we fund development of housing inventory.
Yeah. Becky, from where you sit, you watch the winds here constantly with your finger in the air. How do you think things are going to play out in the next year in terms of supply and demand and price?
Well, I do think that things are starting to stay on the market a little bit longer. Some houses are, some aren't. So we do see a little bit of that trend. The prediction, they are stating that, you know, interest rates are supposed to gradually go down come 2025. But I don't have a magic ball either. So that's just what we're kind of being told. So we just kind of have to keep putting our right foot forward and have some perseverance and have good mindset that, you know, home ownership is still obtainable and we can just keep making that happen, that dream happen for people.
Yeah, and talk to a realtor and talk to Maine Housing and talk to Healthy Homeworks. Just reach out and figure out how this can all happen, because we heard today examples of how it can. Thank you all for joining us today. Jessica Gurney, Consumer Education and Outreach Coordinator for Maine Housing, Amy Smith, President of Healthy Homeworks, and Becky Wilson, a real estate agent with the Masiello Group. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can find our past shows and sign up for Maine Calling's weekly newsletter by going to mainecalling.org. Maine Calling has a new way for you to share comments with us. Just download the Maine Public Vox Pop app. You can use it to send us audio messages that we may play on the air. Check it out. Tomorrow on the show, what it means to pay close attention to nature. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.